As I shared in our weekly newsletter, I ended up being somewhat of a coach for two of my sons, Jacob and Joshua. Mark Thomas does not like sports at all, so he loves to sit and eat donuts. That is his favorite pastime, and he does that really well. Jake and Josh both were in Little League, and anyone here teach Little League kids? Yeah, Paul, you did that. Is it just not the most boring thing in the world? It really is, because you start off at Little League, all you're trying to do is, hey, put your glove out, and when the ball comes, don't catch it with your teeth. Instead, try to put your glove, and we would, for hours, like, you would just be tossing the ball back and forth and trying to teach some good form, and then they get a little bit older, and so now you're trying to do batting, and what do? Just over and over again, throw the ball. They try to hit it, they swing, they miss. They start looking at the dandelions that are there. They start wondering if their shoes are the right color. And it's just really, and it is constant. And then you do these drills, these drills where you would throw or hit the ball, and they would have to field the ball. And they would go down, and they would never get their glove on the ground, and it would always go right through their legs. And you remember those? They go over and over and over again. And I'm telling you, as a parent, I absolutely grew weary of it. I was so exhausted. And I have to admit, I think sometimes the boys did too. But in that, we find a very, very important lesson that I'm hoping will help you temper your snide comments towards the disciples when we hit this next particular chapter. We are going to encounter a story that is going to make you angry at the lack of knowledge and faith of the disciples. And as we do that, we're going to keep in mind that repetition is a great teacher. Teaching stuff over and over and over again is really extremely helpful. It's funny because I feel the same way whenever I do sermons that I've actually learned, I've heard since I was a kid. I've now preached many of these sermons, and I found that every time I continue to relearn material, one, I learn something new, and two, I also get to reinforce the right stuff. If I were going to ask you, are there lessons in terms of your faith development that are difficult for you to put into practice, what would they be? I'm going to probably take a stab and say that I could probably guess a bunch of them. Money is a big one. Are there times in your life that you have stressed about having adequate finances for your life? It happens to pretty much everyone at some point or another. And so far, has God seen fit to bring you through those trials? Maybe you learned something, or maybe you had to pare back, or maybe a gift or a financial donation came in just at the right time. And then afterwards you go, man, what? I need to trust God more often when it comes to my finances, that he's going to take care of me. But then what happens the next time you run into a financial problem? You stress that maybe this is the time that God is somehow going to fail you. Or maybe about your future. A lot of people stress about their future, and maybe they don't know exactly what they want to be when they grow up. Some of you have grown up, and you still don't know what it is that you want to be. And every single time you're wondering, is everything going to be okay? And then what happens? Somehow or other, God works incredible things and does stuff so that you can put your faith and trust in him and not have to worry about the future. But then what happens the very next time something takes place and what do? You start worrying about the future. Why are we so short-sighted when it comes to our faith? Why do we get amnesia when it comes to the lessons that God is going to give to us? Today, the main story that we're going to hit, and we're going to hit another one after that, but it's the feeding of the 4,000. Now, not everyone knows about this miracle because it's not quite as popular as something we just covered a couple weeks ago, which was the feeding of the 5,000. Feeding of the 5,000, a very important story. It is the only miracle outside of the resurrection of Jesus Christ that's mentioned in all four Gospels. But the feeding of the 4,000 is not mentioned in all of the Gospels. Only a couple of them record it. And Mark happens to be one of them. And as we're reading through this, you're going to be like, this sounds really familiar. I mean, even to the point where, unfortunately, some commentators, some religious people believe that there is a conflation of, a separation, where one event kind of got separated into two events, and that's why they sound so similar. Well, the problem is, it's very clear from the text, especially in Mark, that these are two separate accounts. And so the feeding of the 4,000, not quite as well known, but we're going to go through and you'll be like, I've heard this stuff before. So I was very tempted to just simply take the sermon that was preached and just re-preach it and see if any of you even noticed. You'd be like, wow, that was a really great sermon. Some of you might have been like, wait, you already did that. Why are you preaching it again? And I would say to you, well, once you start actually putting this stuff into practice, I'll stop preaching this stuff. So this is, again, for you and for me. Why do we have to go over this again? Because repetition is a great teacher. All right. During those days, okay, I'm going to stop. We need to make sure we know where we're at. Do you remember where we're located in terms of geography? This is going to be helpful for us to understand also why there is a repetitious miracle. The feeding of the 5,000 took place where there were mainly Jewish people. Everyone had heard about Jesus. They were following along. They were on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, and it was mainly a Jewish audience. And then Jesus makes this detour, and he ends up in Tyre and Sidon, and then he's coming back down, and he's now, if you remember, in the region of the Decapolis. This is where Crazy Naked Man was, and this is where he had evangelized to the point where Jesus shows back up, and there's a whole mess of people there. We are in Gentile territory. This is the reason why I believe one of the purposes of the feeding of the 5,000 is to actually make known and to demonstrate the application of Jesus' conversation with the Syrophoenician woman. Remember that conversation? Jesus says, this woman comes and says, please heal my daughter. Jesus says, it's not right for me to take the bread that was meant for the children and give it to the dogs, which sounds very harsh. And then she says, yeah, but the dogs eat the crumbs off of the kids' plates and they fall from the table. Essentially, she's saying, look, I know there's grace enough. I know that you are all sufficient. I know that the grace you pour out is going to be bigger than even what the Jewish people need, and it will extend to us, and I'm just asking for it now. And Jesus says, only one of two people where he says, you have great faith, your daughter is healed. This is the demonstration, the actual application of the miracle that God provides bread, nourishment, spiritual healing, and help to the Gentile nation. We are in Gentile territory. The feeding of the 4,000 is a Gentile miracle. So it's not, the only players that are the same are Jesus and the disciples. This is also one of the difficulties of the disciples. They still have in their brain that God has come for the Jewish people and the Jewish people only. Jesus says, I've come for the Jewish people first, but my ministry is not limited there. It will extend to the Gentile nation. So this is a Gentile fulfillment, literally fulfilling what was spoken of in Mark 7. During those days, another large crowd gathered. Since they had nothing to eat, I just love Jesus. I really can't wait to meet him face to face. He calls his disciples to him and he says, I have compassion on these people. They have already been with me 3 days and they have nothing to eat. And already, I don't know if the disciples are starting to formulate their excuse, because what was the excuse from before? What did the disciples, when everyone was kind of hungry and everyone was grumbling, the disciples came to Jesus and started off by saying, hey, Jesus, there's a large crowd and they're getting hungry. I've got an idea. Why don't you send them away so they can go and find food? Jesus, knowing what excuses we like to throw up whenever he asks us to do something, he says, verse 3, if I send them home hungry, they will collapse along the way because some of them have come a long distance. I mean, can you, if I were going to like maybe act this out, this is how I think maybe Jesus would have said it. I have compassion for these people. They've already been with me 3 days, nothing to eat. If I send them away, if I send them home hungry, they'll collapse along the way because some of them have come a long distance. And the disciples are like, their response is fantastic. But where in this remote place can anyone get enough bread to feed them? Could you imagine? Jesus is like, these people are hungry, and we don't want to send them away. There was a lesson, remember, we had learned not that long ago. We can feel. What should we do? And they're like, Jesus, I'm stumped. Have no idea. I have no idea what you're getting at. We don't have enough. And Jesus then asks them, okay, how many loaves do you have? And so they start looking around again. We don't know where these breads came from. Maybe, we can't prove it, maybe these were leftovers from, how many basketfuls were left at the last miracle? 12, yeah. Maybe they were like, hey, we've got 7 loaves. Now, is that more than the last time? Yeah, because last time was only 5. So do you see what Jesus is doing? Here's a lot of people. How many people? 4,000. Fewer than last time. And you now have more bread. Do you see how that's often what happens in our lives? God comes to us. He does a miracle in our life. We are astounded by it. We feel greater in our faith. And that's the idea. Now when we encounter a problem, the problem will not be as big and our resources will feel a little bit better. And so he's like, what do you have? And he says, 7. And I don't know why Mark does it this way, but they do actually have some fish too. They like, hey, we've got bread and we've got some fish. So they've got more bread and fish and fewer people. And he tells the crowd to sit down on the ground. No disciple says, hey, Jesus, do you remember when we like fed 5,000 people and we got 5 loaves and 2 fish? There's like 4,000 people. And again, I don't know if they were like good in math or anything. They just probably looked out, saw a sea of people, went there. There's still a lot of people. But they're like, Jesus, remember that miracle you did back then? Why don't you do it again? Not one disciple steps up and says, hey, God, I've watched you do this. Just duplicate the miracle. Right? We don't do it either, do we? I mean, we hear stories, right? I mean, we hear of Jesus miraculously healing people. And so we encounter someone who is sick and is in need of prayer, and almost immediately we worry, I don't want to pray for a miracle because if the miracle doesn't happen, then that would be bad. And so we just say something like, Lord, be with the person, or, you know, if it is in your will, let them be healed. But we don't boldly ask, do we? I've had a hard time with this. I think I've gotten better now when someone wants healing. I just pray for a miracle. Because why? Because can God do it? Sure. The only thing I don't know is, will he? Not once do any of the disciples say, God, I saw you do this. Do this again. We're faced with financial problems, and we go, okay, God, you have seen fit throughout my life to take care of me financially. And I'm struggling because I'm now facing something that is similar to things I've experienced in the past, and you've always seen me through. So God, can you maybe do another miracle? We feel bad asking, but we forget repetition is a great teacher. That we can trust that whatever God has done in the past, He can do it again. We don't know if he will, but he can. And so they don't ask, and because of that, Jesus does not provide. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry, that's right. No, even when we are faithless, he is faithful and loves. So he gets them, they sit on the ground. What is he? He takes the 7 loaves, he gives thanks, he broke them, and gave them to his disciples to set before the people, and they do so. Now again, I'm hoping that maybe this time there was maybe a quicker distribution. I'm hoping that maybe this time they had figured out, wait a second, they're all sitting there, and Jesus has divvied this up, and if I remember correctly, we start distributing it, and then all this miracle takes place. We have plenty. That's what I'm hoping. I can't prove it, but I'm hoping that by now they're starting to figure it out. I know this is so hard for us because I know that you and I get embarrassed. We get embarrassed because we fail at the same thing over and over and over again. And we become hesitant to bring things to God because we're worried that we are going to eventually hit the end of God's grace. We will run out of God's provisions. I'm telling you now, there is no end to God's provisions. His grace is limitless. He has enough grace for you and your pathetic life to then also cover me and my pathetic life, as well as everyone sitting here, as well as the sins of the entire world, past, present, and future. There is no limit. Keep asking. Don't be embarrassed. There's going to be times that ball's going to come and you're going to drop it. And what we had to do was, hey, that's okay, Jacob. Well, that's okay, Joshua. Yeah, you've dropped the ball 372 times today, but that's okay. Let's try 373 times. Hey, Mark, I know you're struggling. You're worried about your finances again, and I'm here for you, and it's okay. You're dropping the ball again, but I love you, and I want you to know that. God sometimes needs to teach you over and over and over again. Verse 7, this is where, again, the other gospel, it's Matthew is the one that records the feeding of the 4,000 along with the feeding of the 5,000. Luke and John don't. But it's really interesting that for some reason, Mark's gospel waits until verse 7 that said, they had a few small fish as well. He gave thanks for them also and told the disciples to distribute them. Some people think that this is one of those, they started doing the bread and then somewhere fish showed up and they're like, oh, here's some fish. Based on the way Matthew says it, we think it's all together. But I think Mark, as Peter speaking, this is like, shoot, that's right, there was fish. And Jesus also took care of that. And the people ate and were satisfied. And guess how many basketfuls were picked up afterwards? 12, well, that's what I would have thought too, 12. But alas, only 7, because God really just doesn't care for his disciples anymore, and they don't each get a basket. No, that's not what it actually means. We can go in a long thing. The word for basket is actually a different word for it. But one of the reasons why these details are important is it's a different miracle. This is not the same miracle done exactly the same way, because that's also how God usually operates. Very rarely is God going to take something in someone's life and then reduplicate it to its entirety in your life. That's what we've got to be careful of. I don't know if the disciples afterwards, they're gathering all the stuff over and they're like, well, how many baskets do we have left over? Oh, we got 7. Huh. Didn't last time we get 12? Nathaniel, go back out again. Take another offering. See if we can pick up another basket full of leftover food or not. And they do, and they're like, there's nothing left. Like, it's now all gone. The 7 is up. We often want God to do it again exactly the same way, and he won't. You know why he doesn't do that? Because then we become addicted to the details of a miracle as opposed to being thankful for the person who provided the provision in the first place. 7 basketfuls left over. And then they give the number, about 4,000 were present. And having sent them away, and now this is important because what's going to happen next, again, some preachers, as they hit this, they're like, this doesn't make any sense because he's about to get confronted by some Pharisees. And it doesn't quite make sense. He sends them away. He gets into the boat with his disciples and went to the region of Dalmanutha. So now Dalmanutha is in a totally different area. Everyone is now gone. So this is like a scene break in the movie. We are in a different locale and different people. Verse 11, the Pharisees came and began to question Jesus. To test him, they asked him for a sign from heaven. And this is where a lot of preachers are like, a sign from heaven? Didn't he just feed 4,000 people with loaves and fish? And I'm screaming back at the computer, they're in a different area. Read your Bible, man. No, I don't actually. Well, sometimes I do that, but I didn't do that this time. Because I probably have done this where I go, it seems like it's in this. It's thematically correct, but it's a totally different time and place. The Pharisees are there to test him. And what are they trying to get out of Jesus? They want proof that their view of the Messiah is correct. And we know this because of what they asked for. They asked for a sign from heaven. That is a very interesting choice of words. Not a sign from God, right? Because a sign from God, Jesus could have said, You've seen all the miracles. You've seen me do stuff with Jewish people. Maybe you weren't around. You can ask the disciples about the feeding of the 4,000 that just took place. You've seen people. You've seen me heal people. People have been raised from the dead. There's plenty of signs from God. What they want is a sign from heaven. What this sign from heaven is some sort of cataclysmic, atmospheric proof that he is in control. Something along the lines of, if there was a storm, can you please calm it? Or if it is calm, can you please bring a storm? They were still under the impression that the Messiah was going to come in all of his power and glory, riding down on clouds with like little cloud horses along with them, coming down with thunderbolts and lightning striking all the evil people. And for a Jewish person, who were the evil people? It was anyone who was a non-Jew. So if you were not a Jew, they did not like you. They wanted you dead. And so they're like, can you please give us a sign? And I bet, again, a sign from heaven, just like zap some random Gentile, that would be enough for us. And this is what gets Jesus upset. He sighs deeply and said, why does this generation ask for a miraculous sign? I tell you the truth, no sign will be given to it. Over and over again, they've been asking for this sign. We want a sign. Show us a sign. Again, much like us, we have a view of how God operates, and we do not like it when God does not operate the way we want him to operate, right? Lord, I'm having struggle with my finances. How would you like God to answer that prayer? A sack of money from the heavens would be fantastic, right? You're doing the laundry and now there's a bar of gold just mysteriously shows up. That would be a great one. You win the lottery even though you didn't play it. I mean, would that be a wonderful way to have your prayers answered? And what does God do? Maybe God teaches you to go without something in order to be a better steward. Same thing with like patience, right? Yeah, I've always said never pray for patience, because when you pray for patience, what are you wanting God to do? You want him to just, Lord, here's this person that annoys me. Just fill me with your calm and your peace. But very rarely does he do that. What does he do instead? He surrounds you with absolutely annoying people everywhere. So that you then learn, okay, wow, there's 50 people now in my life that bug me to no end, and you end up learning patience. Maybe some of you have asked for stronger faith. Lord, I'd like to have a strong, robust faith. And what you hope is that God will just zap you with a lightning bolt and you just immediately go, I can understand everything. But does he ever do it that way? No. Instead, what does he do? He sends a lot of garbage into your life, because that is probably the best faith builder of us all, is going through tough times and still seeing God work. This was the problem that the Pharisees had. They were constantly wanting God to do things their way. They want God to be fashioned in their mind. They want him to act the way they think. And I'm telling you right now, don't ever do that. It will never work. God is God. You are not. And God does incredible things in our life that are sometimes completely mysterious. Most of you know the story of the accident. If you don't know, my wife and I were in a car accident many, many years ago on November 9th, 1991. A corollary story that I don't always tell with that is the fact that Heather and I were leading a Bible study at the time. It's a great Bible study. It was called, we did great rhyming, Bible Readers, Pizza Eaters. Doesn't that sound great? Bible Readers, Pizza Eaters. So we ate pizza and we read the Bible. But the best part was the acronym, B, little tiny U, R-P-E, called a burp. It was fantastic. Heather led it. Like, if you don't know Heather's spiritual gifting, she can burp really well. So Heather and I, we're leading this with a bunch of other people. We're having a great time. We're reading the Bible. We're trying to grow in our faith, and we're growing in our bellies because we're eating pizza. And I don't remember this very well, but apparently the burp right before the car accident, we all prayed that God would help us in some way, like we wanted to grow. So I actually put on a piece of paper in very large print, I want a better prayer life. Stupid mistake. Do not pray for that. That is just ridiculous. The reason why I know that this happened was after Heather and I had come out of the accident, after we had recovered, I'm back on campus, and we had another burp session. Heather was not yet back on campus, but I was there. And I also played the guitar, and so I had pulled out my guitar, and I saw this folded piece of paper. And I'm like, what is that? And I open up the piece of paper, and there's my handwriting. I want a better prayer life. Let me tell you something. When you are in a hospital bed, and there is nothing you can do, especially as a guy who wants to fix things or help things, when you are trapped in your house, far away from your girlfriend, whom you love with your whole heart, and there is nothing you can, guess what I did? Almost exclusively, it was the only thing I could do. I was bored. So you know what I did? I prayed. That's all I could do. And then I come back and I read that, and I come to find out, don't ever ask for a better prayer life, because God might send you a car accident. Maybe he won't send you into a car accident. Maybe it's something else. Maybe God has someone who's far away get sick, or maybe you end up having a bunch of car problems and you have no idea how to fix them, and all of a sudden you start realizing, I haven't been praying as much as I, Lord, can you please help me? And God is going to come in ways that you are not prepared for. That's the problem with the Pharisees. They came down and said, we want it this way. And he's like, no, I'm not going to give you that, because that is not going to help you. They wanted a Messiah to come down and kick out the Gentiles. They wanted someone to come in power. And what did Jesus do? He shows up and dies on a cross. What a ridiculous way to show power. What a ridiculous way to show power over death is by dying. But that's how God often operates with you and me, answering your prayer requests, hugely not in the way that you want, but in a different way, so that you still learn the lesson, because repetition is a great teacher. Okay, we're going to start making fun of the Pharisees a little bit more. This is always fun. I'm sorry, the disciples. This is great. So verse 14, again, this is probably Peter talking because we believe he's dictating this to Mark, who's writing all down. And so he says, the disciples had forgotten to bring bread except for one loaf they had with them in the boat. I don't know where the seven basketfuls, did they eat it all? Or were they just like typical guys, right? You know, you're going on a camping trip. Don't forget to pack the suitcases. Don't forget to pack the tent and the sleeping bags. And they don't grab anything except they have a loaf of bread. And Jesus warns them, watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of heaven, that of Herod. They discuss this with one another. What do you think? Beware of the yeast. Beware of the yeast. What do you think that? I don't know. What do you think that means? I don't know. You were sitting right next to him. Did you feel anything? Did he tell you something? No, I don't know. Just beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and of Herod. And then somewhere along the way, someone goes, it's because we don't have any bread with us. I think that's what he's actually saying. We forgot bread, and so he's chiding us for the bread. Now, of course, we laugh at this, but again, how often do we do the same thing, right? We hear God speak to us, and we're not too sure what he's meaning by it. And many a time, and I'm trying to give the disciples a little bit of the break because so many times they heard parables, but there were also times that Jesus spoke very plainly to them, and this was one of the times that he was speaking plainly. And so they discussed it with one another, and they said, "It's because we have no bread." Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000? How many basketfuls did you pick up? 12, they replied. And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls apiece did you pick up? They answered, 7. He said, so do you not understand? Do you understand? I'm not going to lie. I thought I understood what Jesus was saying, and then as I'm reading it, and then I'm reading other commentaries, I totally missed something that I've missed all these years. Beware of the yeast of which two groups of people? Pharisees and Herod. Wait. The Pharisees and Herod, do they have anything to do with each other? Right? Herod is just a crazy leader who is vicious and nasty and has absolutely zero morals whatsoever. And then you've got the Pharisees who are the religiously pious and the ones that are trying to make sure everyone around them knows who God is that they've created in their own image by how good they are. Beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and Herod. Do you feel like a disciple right now? Yeah, I did too. I'm like, because I thought it was something like, well, beware that, you know, bad teachings don't start affecting us. But what does that have to do with Herod? And again, I feel like I'm sitting right next to Jesus. Okay, God, I'm not catching this one. Help me out. And I was thankful that someone else actually pointed out to me. There were only two groups of people who were very obsessed with having a sign performed. Those two groups of people, the Pharisees, which just happened, and then what happened when he was in front of Herod on the night that Jesus was going to die? What did Herod say? Show me a trick, little man. I heard you could do great things. Do something fancy for me. Beware of trying to have God be a performing monkey in your life. Because sometimes we end up doing that. Has there ever been a time in your life that God does a miracle and you become more attached to the miracle than the miracle giver himself? Yeah, we all do it. If you don't do it, you're lying, and that's bad. Don't do that. For years after our car accident, we would talk about our car accident, and we would often talk about, you know, how strong we were coming out of it. And there were many a times we ended up slipping into this almost idolatry of a miracle, and we keep forgetting who was the one that saw us through anyway. Now, are we promised that if we get into a car accident again, that God's going to somehow save us? No, we're not. But we know that God can do that. He can see us through it. And if he sees fit to bring us through that, then why would he not see fit to do it again? We become addicted to the details and forget the one who gave it. This is the reason why Jesus is pointing out the differences. How many loaves did you have left, or how many basketfuls left over before? 12. Why is that? There's plenty. My grace is sufficient. Whatever you're going through, I can solve. I can take care of. You will not crumble. And then what happened again? We did this miracle again. How many were left over? 7. So you see that my grace is not just for you, it's for the person sitting next to you. My grace is not just sufficient for Searchlight Ministries. It's sufficient for others who yet do not believe. It is sufficient for people who do not talk like us, look like us, act like us. God's grace is sufficient. We often try and ask for God to come down and smite the people that cause us problems. God, please take these people out. We are just like the disciples when they're walking through a town and they're not well received. And they're like, Jesus, let's smoke them. Like fire, brimstone, just wipe them out. And what does Jesus do? Really, guys, my grace is not just for you. It's for the hurting and the downtrodden. It's for the people who don't know me yet. It's for those who are struggling in life. And it bugs me to no end every time I hear people saying something about mental health. And they're like, well, you know, if you have struggling with mental health, you clearly do not have enough faith in Jesus. Oh my goodness gracious. Is God's grace sufficient for people that have mental health issues? Absolutely. Does God care for them and love them with a deep, passionate love? Absolutely. Why would we end up somehow mocking them for stuff they're going through? What about your neighbor? You know, the one that you don't like? It's the other side, Irene, not your side. So, yeah, it's the other side. And you're like, this person... I'm having parties at night and they keep calling the cops on me. And so you're so angry at them. And do you want God to somehow straighten? No, how about this? How about God soften my heart so that I can go and share God's love with them? We get so narrow-minded in who we are, and that we believe that we are so special. You are not that special. That God's grace isn't sufficient for the people around you. Because you've got to remember for yourself, you were the ones not so special to begin with. You were the Gentiles. You and I were the outsiders. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. We received the crumbs off the table. But more than that, God did a miracle in all of our lives as well, where he fed us and has spiritually nourished us. And there is much more that can and should be done. We've got to be careful we never fashion God in our own image, that we don't somehow lock him up and chain him up. He cannot be contained. His grace is all sufficient, and it is for everybody. And our job is to share that love for others. And when we find ourselves in the exact same situation, when we are maybe not liking someone or we are stingy with God's grace and love in their life, God's going to come and say, all right, let's try this again. I want to show you how much I love them. And I'll do this by showing you how much I love you. And when Jesus died on the cross, there were people around him that came to faith who were not Jewish people, because it was opened up to others. I don't know what you need to learn today. I know what I need to learn. I have struggles with my own stuff in trusting in God. And I'm so glad that my Savior tells me, let's try this again. I'm going to teach you that I love you. I'm going to teach you that I care for you. I'm going to teach you that I will always be with you. Look to the cross. Remember me. Let's do this again. Repetition is a great teacher. Let's pray.